is Brewers Weekly. Here's Dominic Catronio.
Well, put a roof on it, why don't you? Rain out, Cincinnati. So no series decider today. Would have been a split or a win for the Brew Crew. So Freddy Peralta goes back one more day to tomorrow to take on the Baltimore Orioles in the Battle of the Jacksons. It'll be a fun weekend at Camden Yards. And yes, Corbin Burnes is scheduled to pitch on Sunday. Also, D.L. Hall is scheduled to pitch on Saturday against his former club, too. So don't underrate that emotion as well. The team that drafted him, team that developed him. Obviously, the trade is what it is. But this is going to be an interesting weekend, to say the least, for a reunion front and that sort of thing. In this show, I'm going to break down a little bit of the article that I just posted over on WTMJ.com under the Brewers tab. Just a little notebook for stats and some nuggets and some thoughts about the first 11 games, including Bryce Turang's quantum leap, William Contreras hitting the ball hard, Jake Bowers playing first, and of course, the question that anybody ever seems to ask me, hey Dom, is Yelly back? Is he back? No, really. Is he back? Be honest with me. Dom, is he back? You should see my Twitter mentions. But let me hear what you have to say about it. 855-616-1620. Again, 855-616-1620. That's the talk and text line if you want to join us here on the program this evening. We'll preview this Orioles series and what to look out for. We'll talk about the article that I wrote. Talk a little bit about the league at large right now, and we're going to have some roster conversations, some way too early roster conversations here on April 11th. And if you were like me on this free off day, thanks to the rain out, by the way, the doubleheader won't be until August, so it's not going to be for a while. It'll be a Friday split doubleheader in Cincinnati on August 30th because Saturday's game is on Fox and then Sunday finale. So four games in 3 days at the end of that, and that'll be the last time the Brewers go to Cincinnati, obviously, to keep an eye on that later in the second half. On the roster front, nothing's imminent, but we are going to talk a little bit of rotation and what today's rainout does for this current stretch of what was supposed to be 13 in a row. Again, 855-616-1620. Again, 855-616-1620. Just getting started here on the program this evening. Let's talk a little bit about that rotation and what it means for Freddy Peralta to face the Orioles tomorrow. Stay with us, WTMJ.
Back with more Brewers Weekly after this.
Watching some highlights over here. I'm Dominic Catronio. Welcome into a Thursday night rainout edition of Brewers Weekly. We're going to get pretty regular with the Thursdays unless the Bucks come in and destroy our schedule here coming up with the playoffs starting next weekend. But we got a lot of Thursday off days for the Brewers here coming up, starting with next week. Then they're going to alternate Thursday off days for the next 4 weeks. And then it's pretty much a Thursday. Every Thursday is an off day in June almost, all the way up until the All-Star break. So keep an eye out for plenty of Brewers Weeklies. And if you're not familiar, I'm live all weekend long after the games. Brewers Extra Innings, those podcasts arrive in this feed as well at Brewers All Access. Tell your friends. We'd love to have you to interact with the program there. Same phone number. You can tweet me. You can hang out with us, and let's watch some baseball together, shall we? Also, a reminder, go check out my YouTube page. I posted my second StatCast breakdown this past week, and the next one I think is going to be something a little more specific, not so sporadic as far as just watching me do my process. So we're going to lock in on a specific guy and get some highlights in there and see what we can learn about something with the Brewers. Let's talk about this weekend and the Baltimore Orioles and what the challenges that they will be bringing ahead for the Brewers. Right now, Baltimore is trailing Boston right now. They're going for a sweep against the Red Sox. It's 2-1 Boston in the bottom of the seventh inning. Of course, Jackson Holliday made his big league debut yesterday. Jackson today so far 0-for-2 batting ninth once again. He got his first RBI yesterday. He is yet to get his first big league hit, so we'll see if he does that tonight. If not, it is going to be rocking at Camden Yards tomorrow, assuming he will be in the starting lineup. The pitching matchups coming up here for the Brewers tomorrow, it will be Freddy Peralta going up against Tyler Wells, D.L. Hall against Dean Kramer, and then finally, on Sunday, there's that man, Corbin Burnes, against Colin Ray. The Orioles obviously are a very well-balanced team. They don't do one thing extraordinarily better than others, but they do a lot of things really, really darn well. One of the guys, I think, you know, as Holiday sort of hogs all the headlines from this team as far as the prospects go and these second-year guys, and Adley Rutschman's a star, rightfully so, I think a lot of people are forgetting how good Colton Cowser is, and granted, he's off to a fantastic start. That's not a hot take, hitting .455 coming into tonight. Colton Cowser, I think, is phenomenal, as well as Jordan Westberg. Now, I know he's had a slow start, but it seems like every time he makes contact, it's doing damage. He's only hitting .222, but five of his eight hits are for extra base hits as well. They're not a team that runs all that much, though, other than Gunnar Henderson and Jorge Mateo. So maybe that's something to keep an eye out for that the Brewers don't have to worry about. But they can hit homers. They certainly can hit homers. Granted, righties, their ballpark is a nightmare for them there at Camden Yards since they moved the fences back as far as they did. But Baltimore, really in the middle of the pack when it comes to as a team, home runs, 11 total as a club coming into the day. 12.5 is the average right now. And for perspective, the Brewers are fifth in all of baseball in home runs hit with 16. So there's still not that much separation this early in the season. The Dodgers lead at 20, but remember, they've got two more games than most teams at this point of the season. Padres are there at second as well. What Freddie needs to do, and what he did for five innings on Friday, is just continue to dare guys with this fastball. He is one of the best fastball pitchers. Now, I talked about this in my first StatCast breakdown video over on my YouTube, Dom Brewers WTMJ, that his fastball ride, his carry, was elite and phenomenal, some of the best we've ever seen. He came a little bit back down to earth on Friday against the Mariners, especially with runners on base. And then we had the odd quote from Pat Murphy talking about the fact that he felt that Freddie was tipping his pitches as far as the grips when there were men on second base and they were relaying it to the batter. I talked to some people around the game, and I went and watched video myself, and everyone's like, what? I didn't say that. But hey, maybe it's the manager trying to protect his pitcher because of effective pitches or whatever it may be. One thing to remember with Freddie, he's not great with traffic. He doesn't hold runners extraordinarily well, but when the temperature starts to increase on Freddie, specifically with runners on base, and this is true for any pitcher, so don't get ahead of yourselves here. But this year, he had those two hits with runners on against the Mariners. But last year, the last 2 years, opponents have handled him pretty well, .245 and .222. They had a .755 OPS last year, including 13 home runs with men on base last year. Don't love that for Freddie, so something to monitor. He's been doing better, aside from that sixth inning against the Mariners on Friday. So continue to limit the damage, if any, when there are men on base. Another thing about DL Hall this weekend, I really hope he can manage the emotions. I know it's going to be a tough day, but the fun for DL is, as I said in his last start against the Mariners, remember, that was his third big league start ever. So this is going to be his fourth, and then it's going to be his fifth, and there's going to see development. We're going to see him get better. And this can go one of two ways, obviously. You're facing a team that you know better than most people, playing with your former teammates. You know what gets them out, what makes them tick. And also, they know what you have and what you're bringing to the table and that sort of thing. I wonder if the adrenaline's going to be pumping and he's going to throw a little bit more velo coming up on Saturday. I look forward to seeing that. But DL Hall should be fun. And then finally, Colin Ray. If Colin Ray does what he did against the Mariners last Sunday, fastball command, pinpoint command, sinkers and cutters, and then flip a few breaking balls, some sweepers in there, he can go six again. The good news is with this rainout, everyone kind of gets settled in. And furthermore, the Brewers now have a choice with their rotation. The Brewers can do a couple of things here. Remember, they optioned Aaron Ashby in the supposed six-man rotation. But you have to spend 15 days in the minor leagues to come back up. But what they can do over this next week, if they so choose, if Freddie goes tomorrow as scheduled, you can have him pitch, you know, as the fifth man on Wednesday afternoon against the Padres. And you wouldn't need a sixth starter until the following weekend against the New York Yankees. So stay with me. Freddie goes tomorrow the 12th. Then he'll go again on the Wednesday day game the 17th. Then you have the off day on the 18th. Then you hand it to DL Hall in game one against the Cardinals, Colin Ray game two. And then it would be, logically, that's the spot where normally you would say, oh, well, that's supposed to be Jacob Junis, right? No, you could put Joe Ross there on normal rest, assuming Ross is going to go on Monday, the 15th. Then you put Ross there on the 21st. And then you slide to Wade Miley on the 22nd. And then, boom, you're right back to Freddie on the 23rd. And then from there, you can get back into the six-man rotation because the following week, when you need that sixth man, Ashby's eligible to come back to the big leagues. So that's something to consider. And Jacob Junis is playing catch now. So he might be coming back sooner, and that might be part of the reason why they moved Aaron Ashby down so quickly and just having one start. Thanks for your service. Head back down to AAA and keep refining your craft. So all of these are in play right now. Could Jacob Junis return in that after the off day? Potentially. I wonder if there's going to be a rehab start or a build-up process. Furthermore, you do have the option to stick with a five-man rotation until right after that Yankees series into that Tampa Bay series, right at the end of the month. These are things that the Brewers consider and think about way before you and I start talking about it. So I'm certain they have a plan for that right now. Was so happy with the way Wade Miley pitched yesterday as he continues to build up. Bullpen's in a good spot now with this off day, with this rain out. You should be able to manage six in a row leading into an off day. Brewers are in good shape right now. And, of course, they're 8-3. Let's start talking about the article. I'm going to talk about Bryce Terang. And I've been talking about him a lot on postgame shows. I want to keep talking about him. Stay with us. This is WTMJ.
More Brewers Weekly coming up on WTMJ. WTMJ.
Hey there, I'm Dominic Catronio. We're going to the top of the hour here this evening. Start shifting into some breakdowns and some of the stuff I uncovered here while writing this article over on WTMJ.com. It's my notebook. I'm hoping to do a few more installments throughout the season, including, of course, plenty of stat breakdowns and reactions. The reason why I don't, you know, some people have asked me, hey, Dom, are you going to write more this year since I started writing a lot more in spring training? I would love to, but this is kind of the stuff that I get, you know, held into because I'm talking with you guys on the postgame show. I don't go down to the clubhouse after the game. I'm sitting here with you guys. So I'm not able to get quotes the same way that our fantastic beat crew does. I am there pregame. I am able to get quotes that way. And that's generally stuff I'm sharing with you on our pregame shows over the weekends and throughout the season here on Brewers Weekly. So that's part of the reason why I'm not doing like the traditional beat. So I'm finding my little niche here as far as, you know, let's break things down. Try to put some stuff into layman's terms. And today I wrote about a few guys, and one of the guys I really want to talk about is Bryce Terang. I've said this a few times, that I was asked on opening weekend, of the sophomores, who's the most important player, and who do you expect to be the most important player of the 2024 Brewers? And I said Bryce Terang. The Brewers believe he's going to take a quantum leap, and quite frankly, we have every reason to believe them from what we have seen in the first 11 games of the year. Maybe the most shocking stat that I uncovered so far. First and foremost, the stats say this, okay? Go to Baseball Savant. The stats agree with this statement. Bryce Terang was the worst qualified hitter against fastballs last season. You go to Run Value. Run Value is Baseball Savant. It's a way to measure, are you adding damage or are you hurting the team against a particular pitch? Also, can be worked vice versa. How valuable is a pitch for you as a pitcher? So, like, Corbin Burns' cutter was one of the best pitches in baseball in 2021 and 2022. And it can work the other way. What hitters struggle with certain pitches beyond just your standard batting average? Because he hit 200 on fastballs last year. But his Run Value was minus 17, which, again, was the worst among qualified hitters against fastballs in baseball. So how do you respond to that? Well, first of all, he added 15 pounds of muscle, doing some damage. That's cool. Number two, be a pest with two strikes. So far this year, against fastballs, he's hitting 385. That Run Value is at a zero right now because it's still a very small sample size, but it's not negative. That's certainly great. But here's a couple of smoking guns, if you will, of stats of where the improvement has really shown up. Last year, his whiff rate on fastballs was just over 20%, which is fine. It's not terrible. It's not great. This year, it's only 9%. So he's cut it in half, being a little more selective, not swinging and missing as much. And the second one, this one actually blew my mind. Against fastballs that were 97 miles an hour or above last season. Okay, so like traditional, like what we've seen now is the new normal. Everyone throws 96, 97. So 97 and above last year. Bryce got one hit off of fastballs that were 97 and above all of last season. He's already got two this season. So right instantly, he's swinging and missing less at fastballs, and he's actually hitting velo. Think about that. He hit one in 140 or 130 games or so last season. I'm pulling up his total PAs right now. 448 plate appearances, 137 games. Of 97 mile an hour fastballs, he only got one of them for a base hit. And I can take this to the next level too. I can go ahead and bring you the numbers and show my work, as my stats teachers used to tell me when I was in AP stats. I know that's the least surprising thing you've ever heard about me. I was in AP stats, but I digress. I'm pulling it up now. If you haven't used Baseball Savant, what are you waiting for? I know it's a little intimidating, but it is an incredible website that I use literally daily. That and Fangraphs, I've said it over and over, subscribe to Fangraphs, pay for your journalism. It's okay, guys. But let me pull this up now. Hits. And here we go. So last season, Bryce Terang saw a total of 110 pitches of at least 97 miles an hour. He's seen 19 so far this year. He's already got a pair of hits. And lastly on Bryce, another number that I uncovered, and I've talked to him about this. I've mentioned this on shows before, his two-strike approach. He's a guy that, as he looked back on his minor league career after last season, he was like, wait, I'm not a strikeout guy. I don't strike out. I always put the ball in play. Why did I get out of my game this season and just kept striking out way too much? With two strikes this year, Terang's hitting 250. Now, that's not going to stick. That's a great number with two strikes. League average is 163. Last year, he hit 169 with two strikes. Furthermore, the Brewers, obviously one of the best teams in baseball at pitches per plate appearance. The only guys that are ahead of Terang on the Brewers right now in pitches per plate appearance are veterans. Rhys Hoskins, Christian Yelich, and Willy Adames. Fourth is Terang. Just shy of four pitches per plate appearance. He's making pitchers work. He's keeping them uncomfortable. He is making a quantum leap, all while not missing a step defensively. That is an extremely valuable player. I know he got his first homer over the week in Cincinnati. That's cool. But I think what Bryce's value is if he can get, you know, an on-base percentage, first of all, over 300 because it was in the twos last year. But if he can keep his on-base percentage over 300 this season, you know, right now he's at 381. I don't know if that's going to stick. That's some crazy stuff right there. But let's say he's at 330. Okay, that would be a 50-point improvement almost, 45-point improvement from last season. And with that much time on base, if he's already 7-for-7 in stolen bases, how many is he going to get? He had 26 last year with a 285 on base. Quantum leap. Look out, man. Look out. I'm really excited to see what Bryce Terang can continue to do because the Brewers are going to face a lot of righties moving forward. What does that mean for the roster? We'll talk a little righties, talk a little bit of lineup construction, and a guy that a lot of folks have some really strong takes on. Talk about Gary Sanchez. That's coming up next, 855-616-1620. 855-616-1620. If you want to join us here on the program, going to the top of the hour, halfway through here on WTMJ.
Catch more Brewers Weekly coming up on WTMJ. This is Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
Talk a little platoons now here on Brewers Weekly. Dom Catronio with you. Follow me on Twitter at Dom_Catronio. So I already gave you the upcoming probables for the Orioles. All righties against the Brewers this week. Next week, the Padres come to town here to Milwaukee. They only have righties in their rotation. Then you look ahead to the following weekend after the off day, the St. Louis Cardinals. They only have one lefty in their rotation, that's Steven Matz. They have Matthew Liberatore as a swingman, so that's a lefty. Maybe he can make a spot start, something like that. But then, not until, you know, about 10 days from now when the Brewers face the Pirates, who have multiple lefties, and then the Yankees, who have multiple lefties, are you going to see a left-handed pitcher. You won't see a left-handed pitcher unless you see Steven Matz over the weekend, next weekend against the Cardinals. You won't see a lefty till at least the 22nd in 11 days. So what does that mean for Gary Sanchez? I would have bet that Gary was going to catch today if the game wasn't rained out. William would have been the DH. Reese was going to be the first baseman and figure it out from there, given Reese had the day off yesterday. Or excuse me, Reese was the DH yesterday. No, Reese did have the day off yesterday. I'm getting all my days mixed up because Yelly was DHing yesterday. Gary's barely played. And they're not going to face a lefty. You're not going to have the traditional setup, you know, what they expected out of him to have him be in there as a lefty killer as the DH. But then, well, that means Reese has to play first. And I mean this kindly and I mean this professionally. Reese still has some work to do to get his legs back underneath him at first base. What Monday night was, I know he flushed it and moved on, but that kind of sticks with you in the back of your mind. Like, man, I hope that doesn't pop up again. With all that being said about Gary, the Brewers believe he's a better defensive catcher than what the numbers say. And who am I to blame him? That's the guy they picked. And if you're wondering how Eric Haas is doing down in AAA, it's fine. It's four games. Not going to overreact to what he's done in AAA, 286, just like we're not going to overreact to his spring training. While it was good, it was great. I'm wondering now, with Reese still working his way back, and I don't know how long it'll take Reese to feel confident at first base, if he doesn't already feel confident. I'm sure he would tell you he feels confident, but there is definitely some rust that he wants to knock off here sooner as opposed to later. I can't imagine Gary Sanchez feels that this was the amount of playing time he was going to get. But he also had to know, and looking at William Contreras and what the Brewers have been saying about William's, like, William's going to catch. And you got to be careful not to wear out William. I would bet you have William catch tomorrow and Saturday, and then Gary catches on Sunday, you know, the day game after a night game. But if William catches all three games this weekend, my radar is going to kind of go off. I'm like, okay. I'm worried about wearing out William, and what are they waiting for with Gary? That's my thought. And then down the road here, it's going to get really interesting when Garrett Mitchell is coming back. They're still targeting first week of June for him to be back. I imagine a rehab assignment at some time in mid to late May. So when Garrett comes back, then it gets interesting as to, okay, do you option Oliver Dunn? Do you option Andrew Monasterio, and do you give Sal a chance back on the infield and go back to that original project? Because I'm not taking Sal out of the lineup right now. I mean, granted, we're a month and a half away from this decision, but these things are starting to cook, starting to show their head here in a little bit, because the roster crunch is starting to get real here soon. Blake Perkins has been good. He had a great week against Cincinnati. I just really feel like hard decisions are on the way. And Gary's at the root of it all. Now, if Gary plays this weekend and he has a great game and everyone will feel a lot calmer about Gary and what he can do, I still think Gary is a big league catcher. I just don't know if this is the fit for him. He might be a guy that needs more consistent at-bats for him to be successful. He still hasn't had a hit yet this season, but that's seven at-bats. Every single big leaguer has gone 0-for-7 for a stretch. And especially when you haven't played in a week. You know, he played on Sunday, but that was off the bench. He played one game this past homestand. So I worry about Gary and making sure that he's going to be ready to rip when the bell rings. Or maybe they stick with the original schedule and force William to say, look, you weren't going to catch today, so we're still giving it to Gary on Friday. You're the DH on Friday. I wonder if that's something they're considering for tomorrow. But just kind of a look ahead there. Be ready for these decisions of what's on the horizon. I want to see more Gary, but he's not going to get ABs against lefties for another 10 days probably. So the Brewers might have to get creative to get him into the lineup. Up next, let me get to the question that everybody wanted to ask me about. Like I said earlier in the show, is Yelly back? Is Yelly back? Dom, is Yelly back? Come on, it's okay. Is he back? He's back. Or is he? Let me go into the numbers. That's all I know how to do. I just talk about the numbers, and I try to put them in layman's terms for you guys. 855-616-1620. 855-616-1620. We're rolling on for another 20 minutes here on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
Back with more Brewers Weekly after this. Quality. Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
I could bore you to tears with ex-Woba and his barrel rate and his ISO and his hard hit rate and all this stuff. But Dom, but I know you would yell at me with the alphabet soup. Like, Dom, enough. Is he back? Let's start talking about Christian Yelich. We got about 15 minutes left in the show here. I'm Dominic Catronio. Again, this is referencing the notebook that I just posted over on WTMJ.com in the Brewers tab, talking about some of the numbers that suggest that Yelich is off to a different start than he's been the last couple of years. Remember, Yelich got off to a great start last year, too. He kind of slowed down in the second half, then turned it on again in September. I remember that Miami game when the Brewers scored like a million runs. That's when he really looked like, oh my gosh, they might make some serious noise here. So remember, in the first half last season, Yelly was hitting .281 and .822 OPS. Should have been an all-star if you ask me. 11 homers, a .375 on base, and the numbers were pretty much the same. He was extremely consistent, but he did play 30, you know, he only played 56 games in the second half versus 85 games in the first half. Granted, there's always about maybe 10 to 15 more games in the first half over the second half, but you know, the back started to flare up on him. Why is this Christian Yelich start different than the others? A few of the numbers that I posted in the article. Number one, he's pulling the ball with authority. He's hitting 400 on batted balls that he's pulled this year, including three of those five home runs he's hit. The last 3 years, for the whole season, here's his pulled homer total for each year. In 2021, he pulled three. In 2022, he pulled five. In 2023, he pulled four. So he's already at three. And we're 11 games into the season. That's a great sign. Also, 50% of his overall hits, six of his 12 hits, have been on the pull side. This, I think, is a little bit of a factor of the shift band. When you compare his, now again, 11 games, small sample. When you compare his average on pulled balls in play this year, as opposed to, say, 2021, when A, he wasn't completely healthy, and B, you had the overshift still legal with a guy in shallow right field, Yelich was able to slap the ball the other way, and he really found a home doing that. But teams wanted him to do that because that means he's not doing damage to the baseball. He's hitting singles. But furthermore, he only hit .240 in 2021 on balls that he pulled. So that's the first reason why I think this could be sustainable and this could stick around. Next up, Yelich's maintained his plate discipline. And I think a common misconception about Christian Yelich and plate discipline is people think, oh, he doesn't ever swing and miss. That is not true. He is a league average whiffsman, if you will. The difference, though, is he generally doesn't chase. He still has an above-average K rate, an above-average walk rate, an above-average chase rate. When you put all of that together, you got a guy that controls his zone very well, and when he knows his zone, he's going to do damage with it. The fact that he has maintained all of this with virtually the same swing-take profile, understanding how pitchers are trying to attack him. I look at a couple of those at-bats with Hunter Green yesterday. Hunter recognized that, you know, oh, I'm just going to throw my fastball by him all day. And then Yelly started, first of all, Yelly was out in front of a slider and he pulled it, which suggests, A, he was on time for the fastball. If you're early on a breaking ball, that means you're on time for a fastball. And Hunter Green didn't know what to do. And Yelly continued to spray the ball all over. He was out a couple of times, but I love that approach from Christian Yelich. Finally, the last notes I have here, these blew my mind when I found these notes. Christian Yelich, with runners in scoring position this season, is hitting 546. That is 6-for-11 with runners in scoring position. In fact, he has had more plate appearances with runners on base, not just in scoring position, more plate appearances with runners on base than he's had with nobody on base. And he's doing damage when he's doing getting that opportunity. Again, 546 with runners in scoring position, 450 when there are men on. He has more walks than strikeouts in both of those situations. And the Brewers lead all of baseball at hitting with runners in scoring position in the first 11 games at 373. That is not sustainable, but that's a great number in these first 11 games and why they've been so successful. The reason why this is important for Yelly, and also it's a compliment to the rest of the team and taking on Pat Murphy's reminded basic philosophy of trust the guy behind you, pass the bat. Yelly's hitting third for the first time really since 2021, because then they moved him back to the leadoff spot and he stuck there for a while. He's hitting third with guys on getting on ahead of him, whether it's Churio, whether it's Dunn, whether it's Contreras, whether it's Frelick. The guys ahead of him are doing their job, and Yelich is doing his job by driving them in. And it also helps to have Rhys Hoskins behind you or Willy Adames behind you. That pitchers, all right, well, I got to throw Yelly a strike. I got to do something here. Pat Murphy was insistent that Yelly had to hit third this season with the way that their lineup was shaking out and the way they wanted to construct things. Those numbers right there, I think that's pretty validating, if you ask me, for what he's been able to do this season. And then obviously all the alphabet soup that I talked about earlier, those numbers are great. The hard hit numbers, the barrel rate, his launch angle is better than it's ever been in his career. He's actually hitting the ball airborne. He's averaging almost a 12-degree launch angle. Even in 2018, when he won MVP, his launch angle was in single digits, in the 4-5 range. Then it went up in 2019. It actually was higher in 20 as well, but it's come back down to earth the last couple of seasons. The fact that he's got a great barrel rate, hitting the ball airborne, you do damage when you put the ball in the air. And Yelly's doing it. I love what we've seen, 11 games in. I don't know. I know I'm going to get texts about that all day long. And, you know, that's all anyone is going to talk about is Christian Yelich. And I get it. I totally get it. It's fun to talk about when things are going well. Let's take our last break of the evening, get some headlines from around Major League Baseball, including the big one today involving Ipe Mizuhara. This court case is crazy. Take our last break. Come back with more after this on WTMJ.
More Brewers Weekly coming up on WTMJ. It's Brewers Weekly on WTMJ.
All right, a few minutes left here on the show. In case you missed it earlier, just going to kind of swing around the league here for a little bit. The deposition and some of the court details about Ipe Mizuhara, of course, Shohei Ohtani's translator or former translator, about his alleged gambling addiction. The numbers out of this are insane. Losing millions upon millions of dollars in gambling on the weirdest college soccer? And literally texts to the bookie and openly admitting, I stole from Shohei, allegedly. What? I mean, Shohei might have got out of time just in time. My goodness. That's scary stuff, man. And I was telling somebody this when this story first broke, that somebody who used to live out west, got some friends in Vegas, some friends in Southern California. Before sports gambling became as prevalent as it is now, you know, where you download FanDuel, go over to Potawatomi, do whatever. Before all that, these Vegas and California bookies, that it just sounds like a movie character. Those people aren't real. No, don't mess with them. Because you get deeper and deeper and deeper. And reading about what Ipe's going through, that's exactly what happened to him. That's what addiction looks like. You get deeper and deeper and deeper, and you do not want to mess with these guys. They are scary dudes. They know scary people. And money is scary. I mean, money is power. And that's what these guys had on Ipe. And the bill comes due. It always comes due, kids. Pay your credit cards on time. So that was a big story today. Another bit of news that's breaking late here today, and it's kind of relevant for the Brewers right now. So tomorrow, Remember, you can listen to the game easily on WTMJ, no problem, just like you normally can. But tomorrow, for the folks that prefer to watch, it's on Apple TV+. It's exclusive. It's not going to be on Bally. It's not going to be on Masson for Orioles fans either. So, of course, they're mad that Jackson Holliday's first game's not on local television. Yada yada. I don't care. Listen to us on radio here on WTMJ. But now, sources are indicating to The Athletic that, you know, Sundays was NBC's Peacock. They had Sunday exclusives. The Brewers were on one of these games last year against the Phillies. Now there's an unnamed network or, you know, carrier, maybe the new carrier of that. And my mind instantly went to Amazon. They're not in the game yet. Look, Turner already has Tuesday nights. Fox has Saturdays and Thursdays. ESPN has Sunday nights. I want to be surprised if Amazon, who's already acquired five of the Bally programs and starting to maybe buy up more of Diamond Sports, wants to dip their toes into live baseball on Sundays. But we don't know who that is yet, so that's something late breaking right now. Elsewhere, when it comes to headlines, of course, I'm not going to talk about all the injuries. I talked about that on a post-game show recently. It's not just one reason. I would like to see the sticky stuff conversation. Is there something to it? Guys having to grip so much tighter and figure out a way to spin it more because that's all we care about. We can see the numbers. I want to study that because we know year-round pitching isn't good, but I want to study the sticky stuff and why. Are there this many injuries in Japan and Korea? Because they have a pre-tacked baseball. They don't have to add any of the mud. They don't have to add any sticky stuff to it. I wonder. That's something I've openly said. And I said in last week's show about the A's leaving Oakland and going to Sacramento, it still breaks my heart. I'm glad to see a lot of Major League Baseball is like, what the heck? This is ridiculous. And I want to say on record, make it clear right now. You know, so I'm going to Oakland when the A's play there, or when the Brewers play against the A's in Oakland in August. When the A's move to Sacramento, I'm only going to call them the Oakland A's. I am not going to call them the A's like they want. I think it's even more embarrassing that they don't want to be called the Sacramento A's. They'd rather be called the A's. No, you're the Oakland A's that happen to be playing in Sacramento. And then when you go to Vegas, I'll call you the Vegas whatever you're going to be called. But all of that has been just so ridiculous and so sad to see it happen. Okay, we're back tomorrow. I've got a post-game show after the game as well. 7:15 Eastern time first pitch, so 6:15 Central time. You can hear it right here on WTMJ. Again, I've got a post-game after. We'll also have pre-game on Saturday as well. My thanks to Max Meyerson, our producer. I'm Dominic Catronio. We'll holler at you tomorrow. Hopefully no rain. Keep on swinging.